My name is Kelly Jean-Philippe, and you are listening to the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. Today, I talk with Alan Shedlin. Alan has accomplished a lot during his lifetime. As a trained educator, Alan has alternated between classroom service, school leadership, parenting coaching, policy development, and advising at the local, state, and national levels. Alan attained a BA at Colgate University, an MA at Columbia University's Teachers College, and an ABD at Fordham University. However, Alan considers his DAD and Grand DAD the most important degrees of all. In this conversation, we talk about the nature of the evolution of the daddying movement and highlight a grassroots effort that is continuing to push the narrative forward.
Why, if you are for women's rights, do people assume that it's against men? Why, if you're for advocacy, should it be assumed that you are against moms or women? No, it's quite the contrary, because all of the research tells us that when dads are positively engaged, involved in the lives of their children, all measures of social well-being go up for the kids as well as the families. So why would you think it has to be against women? Lord only knows, and it's hard to stop now this train for me, but where does it end up? It ends up where our country is right now politically.
As a heads up, there's a bit of audio interference, like a persistent clicking throughout most of the episode. I apologize for this inconvenience, and I wanted to let you know in advance. Thank you for tuning into this conversation and for spending part of your day with us. And now, here's the episode. Let's start by asking you to please introduce yourself.
So my name is Alan Shedlin. The most important thing to know about me is that I'm a grandfather of five and a dad of three. My background is as an educator, and for the last 25 to 30 years, I've been studying daddying, as I call it, which I make a distinction between daddying and fathering. And I've been studying it by speaking to the consumers of daddying, who we all know are children, and also to fathers in one-on-one interviews, and doing a whole bunch of different workshops with different meaning with very different groups. So whether it's at the World Bank, whether it's at the penitentiary, whether it's with veterans, whether it's in Head Start centers, in nursery schools and schools, on Indian pueblos. So all of those places, I've been fortunate enough to conduct workshops, most of which are titled Becoming the Dad You Want to Be. So I guess that's probably enough of an introduction.
What is the difference between daddying and fathering?
So fathering, in my mind, is a one-time biological act requiring zero commitment, nothing more than a shot of DNA. And anybody can become a father, sometimes even by accident, but you can only become a daddy by intention. And daddying is where fatherhood and nurturing intersect. And daddying is a full-time process as opposed to a one-time act. So that's the difference in my mind.
It's interesting that you use those terms, and the way that you described it, there's a difference between daddying and fathering. In my mind, it's quite the opposite, because there is this cultural sense that, you know, Black men who are fathers to children but are not committed in the relationship with that child's mom, that's like the baby daddy. So the word daddy takes on kind of a negative connotation as opposed to father, like the father of this child. And at least in the way that I've understood and been exposed to and thought about and interpreted, I never wanted to be seen as the baby daddy. I've always wanted to be seen as the father of my child or my children. So I'm wondering if you've ever come across someone or a group of men, fathers who have pointed out any other differences in terms of these two words and how they perceive it in relation to their background, their upbringing, or any of that.
So, Kelly, you're the very first person who ever made that kind of distinction with me and to me. As I mentioned, have interviewed the consumers of dadding. So I did 28 focus groups with kids as young as 5 and as old as 21 in 3 different countries. And I have done now 205 interviews one-on-one with fathers as young as 16 and as old as 104 from 20 different countries. So it's quite a feat for you to be the very first one who has ever responded that way. It's not wrong, but it's unusual. So I guess one of the questions I would have for you, and I know you have like a 9-week-old and a 4-year-old.
He's going to be 3.
Going to be 3. Okay. So when you walk through the door, if you've been out of the house and you're coming home, do you want him to run over to you and scream, "Father"? Or do you want him to run over to you and scream, "Daddy"?
Definitely Daddy.
Okay. So that kind of where I come from. I've done a good deal of speaking about this and highlighting what I consider the difference between fathering and daddying. And sometimes I bore myself with my talks and with my speeches. So I have to do something that'll shake it up a little bit for myself, but maybe also amuse the audience. And so one of the talks I gave was to a large group of educators at a national conference. And I told them that at the end of the talk, there was a special guest who would be stopping by to greet them. And of course, you know, they're wondering who is this lunatic up in front of them who's talking about the difference between fathering and daddying. I look at my watch, you know, when we have about a minute to go, and I say, "Oh my goodness, I think my guest has just arrived." And I kneel down behind the podium. And when I stand back up, I'm wearing a full Darth Vader mask. This is an appropriate story, given that yesterday was
May the 4th.
Right, exactly. And all I did, I mean, you know, people looking at each other, looking at me like, "Oh my God, this guy is crazier than we thought." I just went, "I am your daddy." And I asked them to imagine how differently the story might have turned out if he had been his daddy and not his father. So for me, that's part of what epitomizes the difference for me. When I coined that term or that gerund in 1994, actually, it took me about 2 years before I felt comfortable saying it, because a lot of people in 1994 was a long time ago. People said to me, "Alan, no real man will ever say daddy. No real man will ever say daddying. It's wussy, it's wimpy, it's soft." And so I was pretty nervous about using the word. It kind of stuck in my throat. And as I was preparing for my first one-on-one interview with a dad who happened to be a former All-State linebacker in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who was head of the diesel engine repair shop for the Albuquerque Transit District. And the interview took place in the cab of his pickup truck. I do the interviews wherever a dad will give me at least an hour of uninterrupted time. Mm. And so in this case, it happened to be the cab of his pickup truck. On the back of the cab was a gun rack. On the floor were Bud cans, and the guy looked exactly like you might imagine an All-State linebacker would look.
Yeah.
And I thought, "Oh, dear Lord, I'm using the word daddy with this guy. It's curtains for me. Door gets open, I'm going to be just shoved right out of the cab. And something kind of very interesting happened, which was that using that word gave him permission to be in touch with a tender side of him that he was actually pretty relieved to be able to talk about. Notice I said tender.
Yes.
And not soft. I do make a distinction, and I do think it's tender. And, you know, I, unfortunately or fortunately, my mind never stops, which is sometimes pretty exhausting. But I was thinking yesterday that I would love to write, maybe because it's Cinco de Mayo, a new definition of machismo, which would not be what we currently think of when we say machismo, which is pretty negative and, you know, very stereotypical notion of what that means. And I would like to redefine it. That would include the opportunities for dads to express the side of them that's more tender.
So I think that's really interesting what you're highlighting, in that this is something in 1994 where this guy who meets all of the physical qualifications, if you will, for a tough guy, and especially how the world was back in 1994, which is very different than what it is today. Today, I don't think there would be that big of a pushback in the majority of dads that you would speak with in using the word daddying, right? Because we're at a place now where fatherhood, manhood, masculinity has taken on different definitions, different forms. So back in 1994, this tough guy was open to talking about his fatherhood, his daddying, in a way that revealed a more tender side to him. And you've seen the progression over the years. I'm curious to hear what your observations has been in terms of how fatherhood and daddying, what it looked like 1994, prior to that, and how you've seen the transformation of it over the years to now 2023.
So that's a good question. And it's a question I've thought a lot about. In 2004, when I was at that point pretty used to and no longer hesitant to use the word daddying, Hallmark came out with a line of cards for Father's Day, which used the word daddying. And people called me up and said, Alan, oh my God, they've stolen your word. You ought to sue them. My response was, no, I want to pay them, because my goal is to have people think differently and not worry about using a word like that with all it means. In 2008, I wrote a piece that I was thrilled the New York Times Hearst News Service distributed internationally, and it was called The Daddying Movement, An Inadvertent Revolution. If I was rewriting that, and I've thought about rewriting it, I would change the title to An Inadvertent Evolution rather than Revolution.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's been a revolution. I think it has been an evolution. And, you know, what I talk about in that piece is that this is not, nobody has talked about the daddying movement. And the reason is because it's happened underneath the radar, in my opinion. In that, if you think again with the stereotype, you know, what does machismo mean? What does that mean? What is your visual when you hear that? So if you would imagine, what would it be like if there was a movement planned by a father? You know, what are some of the qualities and characteristics of that movement? You know, what would come to your mind, Kelly, if I said, you know, how do dads create a movement? What are some of the things that would come to your mind?
For me, I know the important tenets of how I show up as a father, mainly because of the negative connotation that still exists about Black men being fathers. The visual of that is very significant to me. So that movement would have to include and put in the foreground just images and, you know, real life experiences of Black men who are not just like active, but engaged and doing all the things that the powers that be say we don't do and doing them quite well with a level of competency. The movement would also have to dispel in many regards the notion that fathers in general are not well-equipped or don't have the right mental capacity to figure out the day-to-day of parenting. So those type of things.
So if I was to ask, and again, this is all stereotype and that's not necessarily helpful, but I have had a discussion and with a bunch of women, not as a group, but individually, and said to them, you know, if dads were about to create a movement, you know, what are some of the qualities you think the characteristics of that movement would be? So here's what I hear. Kind of aggressive and in your face. Very well planned, systematic, and probably identifying a charismatic leader.
Okay.
Those are three things that I hear. None of those things, in my opinion, have happened, which is one of the reasons that this movement is underneath the radar. I believe the movement was given birth, somewhat ironically, by the women's movement in the 60s.
I was just about to ask you that, Alan.
Yeah, so, and it, what that wasn't planned that would happen, but more men were then being urged to question. More women were in the workforce. More men needed to stay home. Back in the 50s, there was an advertising campaign, and it said, try it, you'll like it. I think it was for Alka-Seltzer, actually. And I think that one of the things that happened was more men stayed at home. More men started doing more child care and those kind of things, and they liked it. So I think that's one of the things that happened. What are some of the evidence of the movement? All right. So as you said, back in 1994, that word daddying would get some pushback. Now it would get less pushback. And that's absolutely true in my experience. We never used to talk about family leave, and we certainly never mentioned paternity leave. Mm-hmm. It was always maternity leave. Mm-hmm. We didn't usually see men out in the street wearing their babies, mm-hmm. pushing strollers, going to story time, going to school conferences, having change in tables in men's restrooms. I mean, there are so many different pieces of this that have been rather subtle, but when you pull them together, the cumulative impact is, in my opinion, definitely there has been a movement, which I think is fantastic because of, and I know because you and I have had a prior conversation, that you're probably aware of Maslow's theory of development, and the sort of the apex and the ultimate is self-actualization, when you get to the point of self-actualization. So it seems to me that before this movement, many of us who really wanted to be engaged and involve fathers, that was not something that society encouraged, recognized, and so it prevented us from being, frankly, self-actualized. So that's just, you know, for me, it sort of goes with, if somebody says to me, Alan, what would be the apex, the zenith in your mind of being a dad? And I, by the way, would say this also applies to moms. Mm-hmm. So it's not just dads. But since there is so much attention have been over the years to the roles of moms and so little to the roles of dads, it's why my focus is not in any way taking anything away from moms. So if you ask me, what is the apex of parenting? I would say is when nurturing your child is nourishing to you and actually being enabling yourself to feel that. So, and you know, I often, when somebody says to me, how long have you been daddying? I get kind of an unusual answer. So all three of my daughters are members of ARP, okay? Meaning they're all over 50. So how long have I been daddying? So I have been daddying now for 162 years. And I know I'm old experience. And I know I look old, but I'm not 162, but I've been daddying for 162 years. Why do I say it that way? Because you're the dad of two, and I know your littlest one is very young, but still, he's probably already showed you aspects of his personality that are different than his brother's.
Absolutely.
So each of those experiences is a different kind of dadding in my mind. So, you know, as I think about my three daughters who are very, very different from each other, God help me if I ever say, you know, you're very much like your sister. No, I'm not. I'm not at all like my sister. And I feel sort of the same way about my brothers. But each one is a different experience. And so, yes, I've been dadding for a really long time. And I watch my sons-in-law, two of my three daughters have children, and I watch my sons-in-law in terms of their interactions with their kids and how much more, I would say, comfortable they're allowed to be in our culture. They no longer would get, you know, the kind of look that I got 56 years ago when I took my oldest daughter to a playground in New York City. And the mom came up to me and said, are you babysitting today? Mm. And because my inner New Yorker immediately bubbled to the surface, which I try hard to keep below the surface, I said, no, are you? But the notion that a dad 56 years ago would alone be with his child in a playground, his one-year-old child, in a playground was radical. So you either assume that I was divorced and it was my turn to have the kid, or my wife died, or, I mean, you fill in the blanks, but it was not natural at that point. And still that goes on, unfortunately. Still people make those kind of assumptions.
Yeah.
I think it's less. And that's part of, you know, what I would call the evolution, the dadding movement and evolution of this.
I want to backtrack to the point that you brought up about the women's movement that sort of influenced the daddying movement. And this is kind of a risky question, but what the heck? We're in the month of May and Mother's Day is, as of the time of this conversation, Mother's Day is about a week away. And since the middle of April, end of April, I noticed very poignantly that all of these Mother's Day commercials started to flood, you know, the television. Scrolling through Instagram, there are all of these Mother's Day advertisements that come up and what have you. And so I got inspired and I posted something on my personal, not my personal account, the Welcome to Fatherhood account on Instagram that said, I'm expecting the same May energy in June. And obviously the implication is the same way that we are rah-rahing around Mother's Day and celebrating, which is duly deserved, I expect that same level of intense energy also for Father's Day. And now I know that's not going to be the case because it hasn't been the case in my lifetime. All of this to set up the question, how much do you think, and in parenthesis, I know our guests, our listeners would know that we are two men having this conversation, okay? Close parenthesis. How much do you think the women's movement, the feminist movement really has a, for as positive as an effect as it had on the daddying movement, do you also see an adverse effect on how that movement cast a shadow on the daddying father's movement?
So yes, it's a provocative question. Let me give a different kind of answer. I got into this, quote, field of daddying, as I said, back in 1994. So it's quite a while ago. I got into it. I'm trained as an educator. That is my professional history, always at the earliest education levels, although I have taught all the way, and listen carefully to how I say it, I've taught all the way from graduate school up to nursery school.
I like it.
But I spend most of my career working at the elementary level. That, by the way, was not considered masculine.
Was it considered babysitting?
Well, a little bit like, well, not really babysitting, I think, as such, but in the same sort of pejorative, negative frame of reference. So I can tell you that when I became a principal of an elementary school in New York City, and people looked at me and said, "Alan, you're not serious about doing that, are you?" And I said, "Does it look like I'm not serious?" "Yes, of course I'm serious." "Well, but you're really thinking of this as a stepping stone because you want to be a high school principal or you want to be a college president or you want to be a superintendent." "No, I don't. I want to work at the elementary level. I believe that's where the foundation is laid. That's where you better get it right."
Agreed.
"Plus, I love, you know, working with kids." And by the way, when I say I love working with kids, that would be another one of the things people think about. "Oh my God, maybe this guy's a pervert."
Yep.
Maybe he's gay. Maybe, you know, so it wasn't a manly, and whatever that definition is, thing to do is to work at the elementary level. So when I got sort of done with my work as a principal and then running the National Elementary School Center, somebody asked me what I was going to do next. And I said, "I have no idea." And they said, "Well, we just had a discussion with your three daughters who are in their early 20s, and you want to write a book on fathering." And by the way, that was 94. That's when I came up with the word daddying, because I said fathering isn't a book. Fathering is a paragraph. It's a one-time biological act, and I can describe it in a paragraph for you if you'd like. But that's not what you have in mind. Where am I going with this? So I had never thought about, yes, I had written a lot in education, but I'd never written anything about daddying. And I wasn't sure how to begin. Where do I start? How do I get a handle on this? And one of the things I did was to talk to a old friend of mine who was a feminist, a kind of exuberant feminist. This was back then in the 90s, early 90s. She was one of the founding editors of Ms. Magazine, and she was a well-known writer. And I talked to her and I said, "You know, I need to ask your advice. I've never written about this before. I've never written a book." And I had a series of meetings with her over 2 years. And finally, in the last meeting I had with her, she said to me, and I'm not going to quote her, this is a family show directly, but she said, "If you don't write your effing book, I'm going to write it." And I did what you did just now. I chuckled. And I said to her, "You know what? You can't write my book." Mm. And she said, "Why not?" "So I think it's okay to say this." And I said, "Because you don't have a penis." And she kind of looked at me. And a year later, she came out with a book. And it was called, it is called Father Courage. Mm. Here is a feminist in the true early feminist tradition, which I'm not criticizing in any way. In my opinion, was probably needed to be as aggressive, be in your face as it was back then.
Yes.
But that's what she was expecting to find out when she wrote her book and interviewed men. Was going to be a negative tone. And instead, Father Courage, by the way, a play on the play Mother Courage, but what she discovered was that the men who were stepping up and really getting into their role as a dad were quite courageous in the 90s, and that was true. Mm. It was against what the expectation was in the culture and in society. So I don't know if that answers your question exactly, but I can tell you that when I came up with the word dadvocacy, which was much more recent, it was probably in the last 15 years, the word came to me out of nowhere when I was flying from Albuquerque, New Mexico to Baltimore. And I happened to be sitting next to a young woman who I noticed was reading a book on gender studies. And I'm assuming that she was probably a graduate student. And I was so excited with the word advocacy that I turned to her and I said, I'm really sorry to interrupt you and bother you. I couldn't help but notice what you were reading. And I just came up with this word and I'd love to know what you think of the word. And I don't think she thought for more than 20 seconds. And she said to me, this must be against women. Mm. And my response to her was, I can't tell you how disappointed I am that is your immediate reaction to this. Because why, if you are for women's rights, do people assume that it's against men? Why, if you're for dadvocacy, should it be assumed that you are against moms or women? No, it's quite the contrary, because all of the research tells us that when dads are positively engaged, involved in the lives of their children, all measures of social well-being go up for the kids, as well as the families. So why would you think it has to be against women? Lord only knows, and it's hard to stop now this train for me, but where does it end up? It ends up where our country is right now politically. Mm. It's one against the other. It's not looking for compromise. It's not looking for where we agree. It's just an automatic knee-jerk response. If you're for that, I'm going to be against it. And it works both sides of the aisle, if you will. And so when people say to me, you know, I'm proposing legislation that's bipartisan, especially, by the way, when it has to do with children. And I say, wrong mindset. Why are you thinking in those terms? It has to be supra-political. Mm. Above any consideration of politics. It's not a matter. Don't brag about it being bipartisan. It's not a partisan discussion. It's not a partisan issue. It's above all of that. And I feel the same way about the dadding movement, about the women's movement. They were necessary course corrections. They still are. So it's pretty damn discouraging to be living in a time where so many questions are raised about, I mean, here we are talking about history, if you will. I mean, it's hard to imagine the women's movement was started way back then at the end of the 50s and the beginning of the 60s. It's a long time ago now. And I recently had a discussion with my three daughters when we were celebrating the, I think it's the 50th anniversary of the passage of Title IX. Mm-hmm. You know what? They had no idea what Title IX was. Mm. They just assumed that girls could have always played all of those sports and did all of those kind of things. It didn't occur to them that there was a time
that was not the case.
That was not the case. Yeah. And I would hope that with the dadding movement, that there will be a time, and it's going to take a while, where it's no longer a question, where people are not asked, are you babysitting?
Thank you for responding to the question, because that's the heart of the matter for me. It's not, I understand that it was a provocative question, and it's a provocative question on purpose, just to get to where we landed, because the women's movement was absolutely necessary for what, I mean, look at the way that there's still tons of work to be done. But there has been many breakthrough moments in the lifetime of the women's movement, to the point now that we're able to talk about, you know, we're beginning to talk about equal pay, for instance, for women's athletes in comparison to their male counterparts. We're talking about equal pay for women in terms of the workplace in comparison to their male counterparts. We're talking about how taking parental leave or paternity leave in particular can be beneficial for this fight for wage equality that will allow the women to get back into the workplace and to further their careers, so that while the men, the fathers, are taking more of that responsibility, a return back to the 50s, if you will. Right. I mean, we've seen how the COVID-19 pandemic forcing everyone to stay home, and the evolution of, or the rediscovery rather, of this joy that men have expressed, myself being one of them. I love being home, taking care of my kids. Like, why wouldn't I want to do this as opposed to going home and then, you know, just being stressed in the culture of the office or the nature of my job, whatever the case is. Like, I absolutely would rather just stay home and take care of my kids, nurture my kids, educate my kids, take my kids out, spend more time with them, watch them grow, watch them take their first step, watch my son go from cooing to talking. I want to be a part of all of that. All that to say, the movement was necessary. It continues to be necessary. But just like everything, there are the positive outcomes, and then there are the things that get muddled. It inevitably influences in a negative way, I think, the way that the conversation about fathering and daddying and motherhood and fatherhood, this disparity between Mother's Day celebrated as this amazing thing, which it is, and Father's Day, which is just like, just get him another pair of socks, a mug, a tie, and he'll be okay with it, and some tools, he'll be okay with it. And that's precisely the issue. I really love what you said about, on the political arena, the supra-political perspective. It transcends whatever political affiliation you have. And I'm wondering, what would be a supra-category that could transcend these two camps in the parenting, daddying, mothering arena?
Let me give you an example. Probably, I'm trying to think of exactly how many months ago. It's quite recent. When the Republicans were trying to select a leader in the House, and it took forever, and it exceeded the time where there was a period where there was no leader. And when there was no leader, some of the rules of who could be on the floor of the House were suspended. And suddenly you saw children on the floor of the House. And the press got a hold of a photograph of a representative from California and I'm trying to remember. Gomez, I think, is his last name.
Sounds about right.
Not to remember. I think Jimmy Gomez. And he was wearing his baby.
Yes.
And this was astonishing to the press. And by the way, many of the women on the floor of the house. And it got a lot of attention, a lot of photographs, and a whole bunch of stuff got made of it. And he seized on that. And a few days later, he got together with a couple of other dads and created the Congressional Dads Caucus. The Congressional Moms Caucus, although it was called something else, was created a few years before that. Just a few. And my thought was, wrong. It's got to be the Congressional Kids Caucus. Mm. It should not be, you know, dad or mom. It should be, the focus is, I mean, you're a dad because you have kids, you're a mom because you have kids. So the common focus should be on the kids.
Yes.
You know, when I think about, and you're talking about all of the wonderful changes with many more still yet and needed to come, as far as women's place in the workforce and on sports teams and all of those things. One of the things that you like to be provocative in your questions. I like to be provocative as well in mine. So I'm asking people to think about if we are seeing some progress of women breaking through the glass ceiling, in whatever those roles are in the workforce, let's say, how about men breaking through the glass ceiling in terms of being dads, in terms of their role at home, in terms of, you know, all of those things. When my youngest daughter, who will be 53 shortly, next week, actually on Mother's Day, was in nursery school, I was invited by the head of the nursery school, and this happened to be in Connecticut, to be chairman of the board. It was a a cooperative nursery school, meaning that parents were expected to be involved. There had never been a dad who had been chairman of the board of the nursery. So that was unheard of 50 some odd years ago. It was always the mom's place to be involved with the kids. That was the year that I took off to finish some of my educational work, some of my degree work, and I also drove carpool. I can't tell you, you know, how radical that seemed to be for people. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be driving carpool. So yes, you know, now it wouldn't raise as many eyebrows as it did then. Now you're less likely to be asked, are you babysitting? So there has been progress. There has been a course correction, and at some point we can stop talking about glass ceilings for people and, yes, sort of focus on the supra political notion of how we look at these issues.
I want to take the next several minutes to talk about a passion project of yours that has consumed your life, according to our conversation prior to this one, which is the Daddying Film Fest. So what is the Daddying Film Fest? What is the genesis of it? And where are we in the process of this film fest, this movement? Talk to us about what that is.
I am so happy you asked that question, Kelly. Thank you so much. It's bursting to come out. Yes, it is a passion project. It's beyond a passion project, actually. So after doing the research with the consumers of daddying, and after doing now and still doing, you know, my 205th daddying one-on-one interview, about halfway through that, now going back about 15 years, I thought I had a pretty good outline for a book on daddying. The working title was Lifelong Daddying, What It Takes to Be the Dad You Want to Be, not the one your mother-in-law wants you to be, not the one your partner wants you to be, not the one somebody else wants you to be, but the one you want to be. And so I had a pretty good outline. I found myself an agent in the DC area where I live. She presented it to 8 different publishers. This is at least now 15 years ago. And each of the publishers, according to her, said exactly the same thing about the book proposal. Best book proposal we've ever seen. Perfect guy to write the book. But men don't read. Men don't buy books. No book on fatherhood has ever sold well. And nobody ever heard of him. That was kind of hard for me to hear. If you had begun by saying this proposal sucks and who the hell is he to write it, that would have been one thing. But don't heap those positive things on it and then reject it. Now, I didn't get to talk to those publishers. I would have said, I don't expect men to buy the book. I expect women to buy the book and give it to men, daughters, partners, mothers-in-law, girlfriends, a way to announce, that you're pregnant is give the book to your partner. I didn't get to have those conversations. There was a bit of an irony, and this is a little bit sensitive, but there's a bit of an irony in that there was a book on fatherhood that had sold very well back then. And the irony is it was written by Bill Cosby, who at that point was at the height of his fame.
Not the Bill Cosby.
Yeah, the Bill Cosby. He was at the height of that wonderful and very good, series that he did, where it was Dr. Huxtable.
Yeah, the Cosby Show.
Right. So in any case, historically, it's ironic now to think about it that way. But so I was pretty frustrated. I got rid of my agent. I wasn't sure she was as excited as I wanted her to be about presenting the proposal. And I got myself into a publisher, a big one. And the editor read it and she said, call me right away and said, I love this. I'm sending it up the line. And I said, I know nothing about publishing. What does that mean? You're sending it up the line. And she said, to the editor-in-chief. That made sense. She called me back the next day. She said, the editor-in-chief loves it also. She's sending it up the line. And I said, I told you, I don't understand the publishing industry. I don't know. I thought the editor-in-chief was the end of the line. And she said, no, marketing. And marketing came back with exactly the same response. What does this have to do with the Dadding Film Festival and Forum? What it has to do with is that having listened to, at that point, 50 to 60 dads and having them respond to the protocol, the questions that I asked during the interviews, although there was much joy that came out, there was more of what I describe as the bookends of daddy yearning, a soulful sadness that came out of these interviews. The bookends being wishing that their dad had been more involved in their lives and wishing that they were more involved in their children's lives. And the soulful sadness was something that I could not get out of my head. And if a book wasn't going to address some of those issues, then I needed to have some other way of addressing them. And as I was thinking about it, I saw a wonderful documentary called My Architect, The Son's Journey. It was an Academy Award nominee in 2003 as the best documentary. And it was by Nathaniel Kahn, whose father was not much involved in his life. And he wanted to know more about his father. And his approach was to learn more about his dad through interviewing the people who had commissioned his architecture and visiting some of the buildings that he had created. Father's name is Louis Kahn. He was the most well-known architect I had never heard of, by the way. Taught in your hometown, taught at the University of Pennsylvania. And I found myself crying through at least half of the movie. And at the end, I thought to myself, I wish that my father was sitting next to me. Watching this movie with me. He had died the year before, so that was not possible. But the reason I thought about it is because issues came up in the movie that would have enabled us to talk about the movie rather than ourselves initially, because they were some of the issues that we had. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that was when the seed was planted. Yes, that's definitely a metaphor that I've chosen carefully. Dads plant seeds. But I thought using movies is a way to get discussion going between fathers and their kids. So yes, that's been in gestation now for 20 years, which is a mighty long time, even longer than elephants. And I think, you know, if I was to give birth to an elephant, it would be pretty painful. It's pretty painful to give birth to the Dadding Film Festival and Forum. Not as painful, I'm sure, as that. But last year we did a pilot run of this, and we invited children, elementary school through undergraduate college, to create videos on the theme of a letter to my father or father figure. And I'm emphasizing the father figure, mm-hmm. because not all of us ends up with the dad we most wished we had. It was all virtual, and we were blown away to get submissions from students in 17 different countries. So we think we've hit on a theme that seems to be important, the one you and I have been talking about.
Yeah.
And so this year, we're having the same virtual piece to begin with, and the submissions of films ended actually on the 1st of May, so just a few days ago. We've received films this year from 21 countries, and we opened it up to dads to also submit brief videos. We have about twice as many dads who sent videos in as we did kids, which is a giant surprise to me. I had no idea what to expect, but that surprises me. And in addition to having the dads submit films, once they're submitted, kids who we've trained to evaluate and judge films, judge them, and they pick the 10 semifinalists for the kids in each of the four age or grade categories, which is elementary school, middle school, high school, and undergraduate college, and for the dads, both shorts and feature length films. So they narrow it down to 10 semifinalists, and the 10 semifinalists are then sent to a panel of judges who are in the entertainment industry, actors, actresses, producers, directors, cinematographers, et cetera. They narrow it down to 5 finalists in each of those categories. And those finalists will appear between June 4th and June 10th online. And the public votes on which one wins, which one is the best. Each of the finalists earns $250. The winner receives an additional $250 and an Atticus Award. And the Atticus, unlike the Oscar, unlike the Golden Globe, unlike the Emmy, the Atticus represents Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, who most people believe is the best portrayal of a father figure in literature and in the movies. They receive, right, a physical award, which is a pedestal with a mockingbird mounted on it. And this year we're having 2 live days as well. One day is June 24th in Albuquerque, and one day is June 25th in Santa Fe, 60 miles apart. And it will be the same program in each place. How that will come about is that we'll have a welcome, then we'll show the films that won this year, then we will divide into discussion groups that will include fathers and their children, and mothers are, of course, welcome to be part of this discussion as well, to talk about themes that come out of the videos. After that, there'll be a break for some food. There'll be a presentation by an Air Force veteran young woman who's getting her doctorate at UCLA and whose dissertation is on how fathers are portrayed in the media.
Yeah.
So she's going to talk a little bit about that. And then we're going to show a full-length film submitted by a dad. It's called Dancing Dads. And then we're going to have two opportunities for fathers and kids, which is one is to take what we're calling a commitment photograph, which will be a still black and white photograph of a father and his child or children, or a father figure, a grandfather, an uncle, you know, a brother, a coach. And we're calling it a commitment photograph because there'll be a place for a father to make a commitment to his child and for a child to make a commitment to his father. And they will witness what each one said and sign it. And then they will get to have their picture to take with them. And the other opportunity is something called the Daddy Wishes Fund grant, which is that dads can propose an activity or a project that they wanted to do with their kid if they only had $250 to do it. And so you can apply for that. The only requirement is that after you've done that activity or that project is that you need to document in some way that you did it, not because we don't trust you, but because we want to post it to give other dads ideas of things they can do with their kid. And the idea will be for us to move this festival and forum to different states each year to highlight both the film industry in the state, but obviously also the topic. And I'm happy to announce right here on your podcast for the first time that next year it will be in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. And part of the reason for that is, A, we've been invited, and two is because Pennsylvania really now has earned the title of the father-friendliest state in our country. Most people are not aware of it. It's all brand new, but there's legislation recently been passed that suggests that one needs to look at what are barriers in legislation that's proposed that would keep fathers from being as involved as they might like to be. It's 5 years in the making, and it's something you guys need to be really proud of. And so we're proud to have been invited to bring this next year to Philly.
You were the one who revealed that title to me. And so my hope is that the film festival and many other efforts, including the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast, might be a vehicle to really put this information out and really get dads within Pennsylvania excited about being residents of the father-friendliest state in our nation. So that's pretty awesome. Alan, I can't thank you enough for this hour or so that we've spent in conversation. Thank you for the work that you've been doing in the daddying space for the last 162 years. I think there's is it a tortoise who is 188, I think. So
yeah, some of my closest friends are tortoises.
Yeah. But no, seriously, thank you so much. And also, I do want to highlight the Daddying blog that you also run. And I was privileged to have been invited to write a guest blog post that went live a week or so ago.
Yeah.
And so thank you for that opportunity. I also got a chance to read some of the other blogs that preceded mine, and it's just a great space to just read the experiences of other dads covering a variety of different topics. So can you just let our listeners know where they can find your platform and how they might get involved as well?
So it's a little bit of a mouthful, but it's the dadvocacyconsultinggroup.com. And on that platform, There is information both about the Dadding Film Festival, about the blog, and about a whole bunch of other things. The blog, and thank you, Kelly, for not only writing a guest blog, but for the topic that, you know, you wrote about, because it's a very, very important topic that doesn't get much play and doesn't get much discussion. And so you brought that up. And as you know, we invited you to write a second blog, which I know you're thinking about, because you said something to me that I have goosebumps now even remembering what you said to me, which was, at what point does your son, your almost three-year-old son, at what point does he go from cute to threatening?
Yeah.
And that is so dramatic to me, and is something so important, I think, for us to bring to people's attention. It, too, is part of not only the dadding movement, but other movements that are just as important in my mind, especially during a time where it needs to be highlighted. I don't want to get you or me in trouble by saying it in any other way, but we need to be mindful of our country's history and being smart about moving forward so that we don't need to ask that question down the road. I'd like to think that there will be a time that that will be so. So thank you. So again, it's the Dadvocacy Consulting Group.com, and maybe even doing one if you're a dad listening to this, or a father figure listening to this, or a grandfather listening to this. Think of doing it with your kid, because next year we will add that category, those films created with an older person and a younger person. So it could be an older brother working with a younger sister or something like that. So to thank you for the opportunity. As you can tell, I am passionate about this, and I do enjoy the opportunity to talk about it, maybe get people thinking in new ways. And to you as a dad of a 9-week-old and an almost 3-year-old, as a friend of mine once said, welcome to fatherhood. Or I would say, welcome to daddy. Thank you.